What's the deal with this?
Deal? What are you saying?
Deal.
Deal?
I don't see what the big deal is, you know? It's not that great.
Good deal. You won't regret it.
What's the deal, son? What do you have going?
All right, look, here's the deal.
What do you say we make this deal?
Per CRE Tech's 2019 mid-year report, the pace of venture capital investing has skyrocketed to reach record-setting highs, surpassing 2018 totals. Despite a flattening trend line across the greater startup ecosystem, venture capital investments in real estate tech continues to be an area of opportunity for investors. Globally, venture-backed real estate tech companies raised $14 billion in the first half of 2019, a 309% increase from the first half of 2018. Today on the show, I'm speaking with Jeffrey Berman, partner at Camber Creek. Camber Creek is a venture capital firm providing strategic value and capital to operating technology companies focused on the real estate market. I'm your host, Ryan Cox, managing partner at Founders Grove Capital, a multifamily value-add investment firm. Real Estate Innovators is a podcast that explores innovation in commercial real estate. Celebrate the companies and innovators who are changing the business of commercial real estate and are inspiring the future of how we work, live, and play. Today's episode is brought to you by Real Massive. Real Massive is commercial real estate's real-time data provider and marketplace providing accurate and up-to-date information to improve the way the industry makes decisions. Leveraging advanced proprietary technology, Real Massive solutions enable customers to access and integrate data that includes both the latest property and available listing data across the country. With data available on over 30 million commercial properties and 300,000 available listings, investors, brokers, and industry professionals can download comprehensive market data and combine with their existing data solutions to develop a complete view of market trends and behaviors. Visit realmassive.com to learn more about real-time data or discover the space that works. I asked Jeffrey about his background and what led him to found Camber Creek.
I come from the real estate world. I actually grew up in a multi-generational real estate development family, and I was exposed to the business at a very early age, as were my brothers and cousins who were partners with us in the business. Many kids went to summer camp. My brothers and I did that too, but we also went to business camp. So we really had a strong reference set around the real estate environment. After college, I spent a few years in Russia. Yep, Russia, working with a private equity firm that bridged the gap between Eastern business opportunities and Western capital and vice versa. When I returned to the US, I began working in my family's real estate company, primarily in leasing, management, and acquisitions. This was around, I suppose, 2005, 2006. Now, the success of our family business was and is predicated on the incredibly hands-on manner with which each property is managed. Everything from development, legal, property management, we really sweat the details. And like many family businesses, mine is and was quite conservative. And the reason I keep on using the present and past tense is that I am no longer part of that operational group, but that is where my background is. And I suppose you could say like the unofficial motto of the family is be fearful when people are greedy and be greedy when people are fearful. So in practice, that means that during boom times, the family's pretty quiet, managing their properties, going about their business. In bust times, in times of economic dislocation, that's when they go shopping, right? So in 2008, in a post-Lehman Brothers world, we're looking at deals across the country and buying a number of them. And my cousin and partner, and also Camber Creek founding partner, who at the time was president of operations of our family business, he recognized that we were operating in the substantially same manner that our grandfathers who had founded the company were operating. And that's when the seed behind the idea of Camber Creek was planted.
As a venture capitalist, you're paid to learn as much as possible about new markets and to meet the smartest people you can find. I asked Jeffrey about the process and the start to launching Camber Creek.
As far as our beginnings in venture capital, it was rooted in the fact that we wanted to find efficiencies and create efficiencies in our own portfolio. So it was us looking at the mirror and saying, how can we do our business better? And then it was, well, these products, this software, these solutions are geared towards making our real estate more efficient. Since we're end users, maybe we should look at investing in them as well. And then to its syllogistic end, it was, well, wait a second, even though our private portfolio is rather large for a private company, in the grand scheme of things, it's minuscule compared to the global real estate market. And since real estate is the largest asset class on the planet by far, it makes sense that investing in companies that can create value and create efficiencies and create innovation within a space that has traditionally been slow to iterate, adapt, and adopt new technology. Well, the best way to do that is to have a vehicle to invest in those companies. And the best investors in that vehicle would be people who looked like us, people who owned a lot of real estate, had deep referent and experiential sets in real estate. And that was really taking the idea from its genesis all the way to where we are now as the oldest venture capital, the real estate technology venture capital firm, I believe, on the planet.
I asked Jeffrey about his family's real estate portfolio that serves as the beta lab for Camber Creek's venture-backed companies.
The assets behind the family are just one in a much broader set of LPs that we call the backbone of our beta lab. So suppose the family has between 10 and 12 million square feet of commercial office and 1,400 apartments, give or take. Our beta lab with our current investor set has hundreds of millions of commercial office square feet and hundreds of thousands of multifamily apartments. And that really can't be, the importance of that can't be underemphasized. The reason being is that when we're only testing products and services on our own portfolio, it is a statistically insignificant sample. But now that we have this massive LP investor base around us with humongous and tremendous amounts of real estate all across the country, and in fact, globally, we have a much wider reference set. And so while the family is commercial office, retail, multifamily, our investors own, manage, and develop commercial office, retail, residential, industrial, flex, and hospitality.
I asked Jeffrey which old commercial real estate models Camber Creek has been focused on challenging.
As I mentioned earlier, real estate is the largest asset class on the planet by far. So, and because it's been so traditionally slow to adopt and adapt, the old models we're challenging run the gamut from how transactions are executed to how buildings are managed. I'm happy to give an example. Over the last decade or so, a number of digital tools have emerged that make searching for deals much easier, more efficient. So, you know, firms like Crexie or 10X, et cetera. But the entire process is still relatively analog. And by that, I mean that you still have to go through the steps, the discovery, the due diligence, title insurance, appraisal, and execution. And you have to engage a different group of professionals for each. So the closest analog I can actually come up with is the finance industry. 30 years ago, if you wanted to buy stock, you called a broker who then went through a very manual process that resulted in stock getting bought or sold on the trading floor. Today, while we're having this conversation, I could be buying and selling stock and you would have no idea, and it would be done instantaneously with all the necessary tools right at our fingertips. So we think it's just a matter of time before that same thing happens, and our investments reflect that. To be clear, that it's a matter of time before technology becomes so ensconced in the real estate processes that we'll be able to buy and sell real estate from our mobile phone immediately. So as an example, you can look at our portfolio company, Bowery. So this is a deal that we led at the seed stage. Bowery is the first end-to-end technology-enabled appraisal firm in the world. And what that means is they employ a proprietary technology platform to make the job of their appraisers more efficient, typically 70% faster than their competition. So at a micro level, when you think of, oh, great, they have a product that can deliver results 70% faster and typically cheaper, that's great. But the company's expanding. Since we've invested, they've had a number of merited up rounds. And when you look at what they're building in the macro, we have a company that is building a dynamic data set that's continually being updated and upgraded. And given that most real estate transactions require an appraisal, especially if you want financing, theirs is a necessary component to the process. The data that they are continuing to build on, that system, will form part of the undergirding that will allow automatic real estate transactions to take place.
I asked Jeffrey about the gaps or hurdles in the technology stack today that need to be solved in order to enable the transaction of the future.
I think a big one is the idea that you need a wet signature for most of these deals. And there are companies, and again, you can look at each part of the process within the real estate transaction, train that greater efficiencies can be created. And really it's going to be a singular platform. And just like you have TD Waterhouse or Schwab or what have you, you're going to have, let's say, a Crexie who will be enabled to have due diligence at your fingertips, title, appraisal, and execution all on their platform. And they will use companies like a Bowery in order to execute and effectuate that process.
I asked Jeffrey to further explain the concept of a wet signature.
So a wet signature is literally putting pen to paper. And probably everyone who's listening has had to get a notary to notarize alongside their wet signature at some point in their life, whether they're getting a loan or they're applying for a job or testifying for something. It's that idea that somebody has to see you take a pen to the paper, scribble your name, and then stamp. That is about as antiquated as it comes. And so there are a number of companies in the real estate tech sphere that are working to digitize that process and make it secure enough such that the in-person wet signature is no longer necessary.
I asked Jeffrey how efficiencies created by digital tools will impact commercial real estate markets.
The major one is liquidity, right? Because if you look at real estate as an asset class, it's typically illiquid. Yes, you can buy and sell REITs on the stock market, but you can't touch, hold, and feel a share. You can hold it and touch and feel a share certificate, but you can't touch, hold, and feel the building that's behind it. Whereas the idea that you could trade a piece of real estate and then start to use it instantaneously, that is going to create a liquidity events, micro and macro liquidity events throughout the real estate lifecycle that wasn't available in prior iteration in prior real estate markets. And you can see the advent of tokenization of real estate as moving towards this trend.
Tokenization of a piece of real estate would allow an asset to be easily bought and sold in a liquid, transparent marketplace, which should, in theory, increase the pool of money coming into the asset class, and again, in theory, increase the prices of tokenized properties. I asked Jeffrey who the winners and losers will be as liquidity in the marketplace grows.
I haven't thought about it in the context of winners and losers, except from a macro perspective of creating a more efficient marketplace. When there's less opacity, when there is more information, for instance, again, going back to the analog of the finance industry, if you want to buy and sell stock, all of the platforms that you use to do that have the research that ought to be necessary in order for you to make an informed decision. So it should be the same thing with real estate. If there's a world that's being created where liquidity is easier to pull out from assets, well, that means that someone is buying, that someone's on the other side of that trade, and the information is more readily available than has currently and traditionally been available in the real estate world. The real estate world has typically been, let's keep our information as close to the chest as we possibly can. Let's trade on asynchronous information or information that the market might not have. And actually, as somewhat of a related tangent, there are a number of companies that are getting really micro into trying to understand demographics, psychographics, people traffic, that's giving retailers pause and saying, well, you know, this corner used to be an amazing corner, but the trends are showing that, for instance, the pizza place that used to thrive there, well, searching phone records shows no one's looking for pizza in this neighborhood anymore. So maybe it should be a vegan restaurant. So tools like that create a greater amount of information about any given corner or any given asset are really all good things. So I see the space. If you want to put it into winners and losers, I really see it as just a win-win.
I asked Jeffrey about the other big ideas that Camber Creek is excited about.
Other large ideas, let's take the notion of the renter and the rentee, or the leasor and the lessee. this idea that in the past, if I rent you space, whether it's commercial or residential, the relationship has primarily been predicated on the notion that you're a good credit risk, you're going to pay me every month, and that's pretty much all of the dialogue we're going to have, unless there's a problem with my building or there's a problem where you're not paying the bill. There wasn't really a dynamic relationship. Technology is changing that. The market is beginning to understand that the renter who's renting a home is a 3D human being that has wants, desires, dislikes, and you can market products and services to that person that makes them a richer hunting ground for additional revenue or additional delight in their experience. And I think that's something we're tremendously excited about. And I call that the up utilization of space, because this idea that you have multimodal uses for both commercial and multifamily space that haven't really been dug into and are just beginning to be explored as technology makes that easier.
I asked Jeffrey which companies we should be paying attention to that are helping to create the multimodal space.
There are quite a number of companies in the space. You can look at companies that run the gamut from enabling fitness services, like there's a company called TF Living. You can look at companies that are trying to build on the reputations of commercial landlords like Equiom and trying to make a commercial experience better. So there are a number of them.
I asked Jeffrey if there were any areas of commercial real estate that are lacking in focus or investment dollars.
Well, I think the retail world presents a really interesting challenge and opportunity specifically for that, because you look at the headlines and it always says retail's dying. And you look at the reality on the ground here in New York, there are entire streets where there's a lot of vacancy. And that's as much a function of changing shopping habits as it is high rent. But if you look at total retail sales and you include the 800-pound gorilla, which is Amazon, retail's growing. So it's how that gets manifested. And I think retail presents that opportunity specifically with innovations like 3D printing or just-in-time delivery that and how that factors in to operations of multifamily and to a lesser extent commercial buildings. It's going to be really interesting to see that develop. Pulling up from that, I think that if you think about technology as a catch-all, technology is changing the landscape of every vertical within the real estate industry. So like take the construction space. You have drone machine learning and AI that are making things like change order management. That's one little thing that much easier. In the multifamily space, tools such as Funnel by our portfolio company Nestio are changing the way multifamily operators lease and market their portfolios. Our portfolio company VTS, which recently joined the Unicorn Club, has transformed the leasing and asset management process for landlords, reducing cycle times by up to 41%. They have something like 10 billion square feet on their platform. Same thing with our portfolio company Measurable. Sustainability data is becoming ever more important. So Measurable, their precision software that's built to help collect, report, and act upon non-financial data, as that becomes a more important piece of reporting, companies like that grow. So you can take a look at every single item in the workflow process that is the real estate industry, and you can apply digital tools to it to make it more efficient. That's the exciting opportunity.
We have seen an exponential growth in specific commercial real estate industry-related information being generated by third-party sources, including a new generation of firms focused on collecting and analyzing market data, and by unstructured sources such as social media. I asked Jeffrey his thoughts on the state of big data in 2019.
I think we're still very much in the early days. You know, as a venture capitalist, we're pitched companies all day long. And you'll typically hear entrepreneurs say, well, this is what our company does, but really we're a data play, right? And whenever anyone says that, I raise an eyebrow and say, okay, well, explain how the data is going to be utilized. So the companies that we're investing in have actually figured out an adroit way to answer that question. So specifically with Bowery, if you look at Bowery today, They are an appraisal firm. They are a tech-enabled appraisal firm. But if you look at the data and the data set that they're building, it is incontrovertible that they are taking the experience that each one of their appraisers has, the knowledge that is created from that, and creating a dynamic database from which future transactions can be compared and pulled against, something that's never been done before. Similar with Measurable. So Measurable is taking all of this top of funnel data, all this energy management, building data, and distilling it in an outcome into a product that can be utilized and for the end users to benchmark how they're doing against their own pro forma and against their peers. So I would say that we're at the beginning, but the companies that we are investing in have an eye towards how their data is either used or is going to be used to make the industry more efficient.
Many entrepreneurs looking for funding from venture capitalists don't know enough about the investment process. I asked Jeffrey what Camber Creek looks for in a team and company for investment.
You said it. The first thing we look for is the team, right? If the team is strong and they have well-rounded individuals who understand that they're in a high pressure environment where they need to perform. That's the first element we look for. We've been pitched, unfortunately, by entrepreneurs that have not been as strong. And even if they have a wonderful idea, because their strength isn't in some form of leadership, their companies are that much less likely to succeed. And then let's talk about the nitty gritty.
I asked Jeffrey about Camber Creek's investment thesis.
We ask ourselves and the companies that are pitching us two fundamental questions. First is, can we use this product, software, service within our portfolio matrix? And I define that as the buildings that we and our LPs own, which, as I mentioned, is hundreds of millions of square feet and hundreds of thousands of multifamily units, the tenants and residents who work and live in those buildings, and the vendors who serve all three. And if you think about that from a permutational basis, the amount of relationships that could be leveraged for the benefit of our portfolio companies and our LPs is almost limitless among that many square feet. The second question is arguably the more important question. Is there a viable venture return scenario that this company is presenting? And what that means in English is, okay, great, we could use this product, software, service, but are we going to make a lot of money from it? Many companies will strike the first box. They'll answer the first question in the affirmative. Very few will strike the second and not the first, but fewer still will strike them both. Because that line, adhering to that discipline, is so strict that the ability, one, to create something that is not easily replicable and has a large defensive moat is just not easy, especially when the market moves as a mob. It's like, oh, today multifamily is hot. Oh, tomorrow co-living is hot. Oh, the next day co-working is hot, so on and so forth. So we have to be very careful with our diligence process. And when we find a great team that can then sail through those grids, that's when we look at deploying capital.
Real estate tech founders usually have some combination of tech and real estate experience of varying scales. I asked Jeffrey what makes a good team.
Sure. It's an amalgamation of all three. And by that, I mean, and you can look at any of our portfolio companies to provide an example for that. So if you look at Bowery, we've already mentioned them, the co-CEOs and co-founders started in the appraisal industry. So it was something they knew really well. And when they were recruiting their initial team, they recruited full stack engineer and they recruited an MAI. So they had that idea of, we're going to create the complete team necessary to be able to leverage our own expertise for the benefit of this market. And you could say that going across the line of every single one of our portfolio companies. So really, I think as you laid out those three categories, it really is an amalgamation of all three.
I asked Jeffrey how Camber Creek differentiates itself from other venture firms.
I think you're asking what makes us unique. And the first unique marker is how long we've been at this. You know, we have the reference set, not only from a real estate perspective, all of the general partners at Camber Creek come from the real estate world. We have an intense and intimate understanding of the various processes that real estate professionals and real estate owners go through. But it's also our strict adherence to our investment thesis, which I laid out below. There are a lot of great investments that we have passed on because for one reason or another, they don't fit that model. And we stick to our model. I like to say we are an inch wide and a mile deep. But the real estate tech industry right now is small, and we've got great relationships with our colleagues across the space.
In respect to commercial real estate technology, I asked Jeffrey about the biggest change in expectations from tenants.
So I highlighted this earlier. From their perspective and from the landlord perspective, this idea that they're not just a, hey, we're here to just pay your rent and you're here to just give us a space. There's an experience behind that. There's this idea that we are all human beings and we're part of a community. I think that's one of the larger themes that has emerged in the past number of years. And I suppose we wouldn't be talking about the real estate industry if we didn't talk about WeWork. And I give WeWork quite a bit of credit for making that part of the conversation, because they didn't create a new type of business. Regis existed long before them, but what they did do was they created a community behind it, which has had very interesting consequences for the entire industry.
I asked Jeffrey what he views as the biggest opportunity for real estate professionals to leverage technology.
Well, I would say to make their jobs more efficient. And I think the unspoken subtext of the question is primarily in reference to brokers. You read this all the time. It's like, oh, well, are we going to need brokers in the future where we'll automatically be able to access an apartment or access an office space? And as in, is technology going to obviate the necessity of having a broker involved in real estate transactions at all? You know, again, you can look at the finance industry as the analog. Maybe there will be fewer brokers. Maybe technology will create redundancies for a number of the functions that brokers and other professionals perform. But I can tell you from my own recent experience that at least as of now, brokers and the professionals around the real estate sphere are still a necessity. And there's plenty of broker tech out there. But I think it's safe to say that the real estate professionals, again, not just brokers, but of all trades that touch the real estate industry, the ones that adopt and utilize technology will be ahead of the ones that do not.
Thinking about a few of the big technology applications, including artificial intelligence and machine learning, I asked Jeffrey what he sees as the next frontier of possibility for those applications in commercial real estate.
I'm going to pull away from your question for a moment, because you can answer that in a number of ways. And I think it's important to understand the types of companies that we at Camber Creek invest in. And that might give a lens to where we see the market going. And if you want to get as specific as AI and ML, we can talk about that. But there are two types of companies, right? There are platform level companies, the big winners in the space, like a VTS or a Latch. And then there are the niche companies, the point solutions. And the idea that those two types of companies will coalesce, because a niche company will then be able to plug and play right into a platform level company. A lot of what you're seeing in AI and ML is being employed by these niche level companies that have one or two specific functions that are then germane to a process in a larger real estate, either transaction or job. And the way you can think about that is, for instance, on the construction site. So you're building a building, and you have drones that are equipped with cameras that can detect the difference between what is actually being built and what is in the plans. And then a piece of software that sits behind them and says, A, alerts, let's say, the foreman, hey, by the way, this is a problem. This is going in and it shouldn't be going in, or there's some kind of danger. So I just took a very specific example, and yet I could probably come up with a dozen different examples of how AI or ML can be employed in all facets of just construction. So I think what you'll continue to see is the evolution of how the basis of those technologies, how artificial intelligence, how machine learning, how natural language algorithms get utilized in everything from construction to contracts. So it really runs the gamut.
Jeffrey mentioned earlier in our conversation the tokenization of commercial real estate. I recently read an article that said 2018 was the year of testing and that 2019 was the year of emerging technologies. I asked Jeffrey how he sees the opportunity with blockchain in commercial real estate today and in the future.
I think blockchain technology has the potential to be transformative for the real estate industry, specifically on the information side and as pertains to transactions. I don't think we're even remotely close yet. I think one of the larger issues that we have to contend with is right now you can tokenize a single building or even a single portfolio and keep that as a closed group of people that can have a high degree of liquidity within their closed group. How that's going to manifest in the wider market, is there going to be an exchange that trades assets in Timbuktu and in Tennessee? So it's without that global exchange system, I think really we're talking about very sophisticated tick structures. But on the face of it, blockchain technology, this idea of an immutable ledger of truth, is quite exciting.
We are still far from a fully autonomous, self-driving vehicle, but I asked Jeffrey how Camber Creek is thinking about autonomous vehicles and their impact to commercial real estate.
Mobility is one of the areas where we are focused from a top-down investment perspective. It is clear that autonomous vehicles are going to shape the way goods and services are moved, the way cities and even suburbs and exurbs are planned, the way real estate is developed. For instance, let's just look at the mall, right? Are you going to need, assuming that malls still exist, are you going to need these massive parking fields, or are you going to have an ever-ready set of cars that are just continually moving like little Lego pieces? So that's something that we are intently focused on. Again, very early days, a lot of encouraging signs where you have municipalities that are willing to test these technologies and create a safe environment for that technology to flourish and hopefully be adopted and adapted. But it is, I do believe that autonomous technology is going to be a harbinger of a new and different type of growth from a micro perspective of the streetscape that you experience as a pedestrian and vehicular traffic and a shopper for lack of a term, all the way to how and why and where real estate is developed.
I asked Jeffrey his thoughts on the changing concepts of mobility and the impacts of urbanization.
Sure. Well, look, necessity is the mother of invention, right? And at least in New York, where traffic is crippling, it doesn't seem to abate at any hour of the day. This idea that you could have an autonomous functioning vehicle that could take you from point A to point B and be able to move in lockstep with an entire grid system is quite exciting. And then how that affects the, you know, multimodal transportation, i.e. bikes and scooters. You know, will those become somewhat autonomous, or will human beings still be allowed to pilot those around specially designated zones? So it's definitely something, this is a 100-year question, not a 5 or 10-year question.
I asked Jeffrey what success looks like for Camber Creek over the next 12 months.
Success to us is continually executing on our strategy, building companies that in turn create efficiencies and drive value in our LPs. If we can keep on doing that, that's success.
Great to connect with Jeffrey Berman of Camber Creek today. Camber Creek continues in a direct and significant way to the success of its portfolio companies by leveraging the real estate expertise, operating experience, and portfolio of assets of its partners, investors, and advisors. Their team has investing, operating, and technology experience and expertise across a range of real estate businesses, including construction, property management, development, and leasing. Their investors own, operate, and manage over 150 million square feet of real estate in the U.S., giving Camber Creek a unique competitive advantage as an investor and value-added partner in the real estate technology space. And that concludes our show. I'm excited to follow Jeffrey and Camber Creek's pursuit to transform commercial real estate through venture investments. Find out more about Jeffrey and Camber Creek in the show notes. Please subscribe to The Real Estate Innovators and write a review wherever you subscribe to podcasts, which helps us grow our audience. Find out more about The Real Estate Innovators at therealestateinnovators.com. Until next time, innovators.